Good evening. It's good to be out with you all again this evening. I'd like to begin the lesson this evening as I did this morning, thanking the elders for the opportunity to come and to be with you all once again. If you'll recall this morning's lesson, we began it in Isaiah chapter 1. And I won't turn back there again this evening for the sake of time, but in Isaiah chapter 1, we looked at the people of Israel and God's criticism of them in the Old Testament. And we also looked at, as God tells them to stop coming to the altar for useless worship, to stop coming for useless sacrifice, and to turn their hearts and their actions back to God. And we also looked at that the first thing that he tells them to do in Isaiah chapter 1 is specifically pointed at their everyday lives and about the injustice that had plagued the nation of Israel and about how God cares not just what we know, but the kind of people that we are. And I said this morning that that was the theme that both of today's lessons were going to take. And so we're going to continue along that theme of looking at some very practical things, some hopefully some very helpful things that we can apply in our everyday lives as Christians. So as we get into the lesson this morning, I'd like to share with you something that I read in a book about 6 months to a year ago. And this is a book by a man named David Platt, and the name of the book is Radical. Now, as I read this, I will say that if you have read this book or if you are going to read this book, I don't necessarily endorse every conclusion that he comes to in the book. But this is a statement that is very pertinent to our topic tonight, and I thought it was worth sharing. And he's speaking in the context of the book that the idea we sometimes have of Jesus and what Jesus would want for us isn't always one that matches up with the Jesus of the Bible. And so he says, a nice middle-class American Jesus, a Jesus who doesn't mind materialism and who would never call us to give away everything we have, a Jesus who would not expect us to forsake our closest relationships so that he receives all our affection, a Jesus who is fine with nominal devotion that does not infringe on our comforts because, after all, he loves us just the way we are. A Jesus who wants us to be balanced, who wants us to avoid dangerous extremes, and who, for that matter, wants us to avoid danger altogether. A Jesus who brings us comfort and prosperity as we live out our Christian spin on the American dream. He's beginning to look a lot like us because, after all, that is whom we are most comfortable with. And the danger now is that when we gather in our church buildings to sing and lift up our hands in worship, we may not actually be worshiping the Jesus of the Bible. Instead, we may be worshiping ourselves. So the question that I want to pose as we go throughout the lesson this evening, and the question that I have been posing to myself since reading that, is what are the ways in which my picture of Jesus and the picture of what Jesus expects of me has become more and more something that is in line with a comfortable American life? What are the ideas that we have that need to change because the Jesus in the Bible isn't a Jesus that fits in with a comfortable 21st century American life? And we're going to take a look at one of those ways this morning. So if you look in John 13 with me, John chapter 13, and I won't read the whole section again, but I will read the first part of it. And so we'll read in John 13, beginning in verse 3. John 13, beginning in verse 3. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, arose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Then I'd like to look just briefly down at the bottom of the text, verse 14. "If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." So the first thing that I want us to consider in the context of this occurrence this morning is who it was that was doing the washing. If you look over in Isaiah chapter 11, Isaiah 11 gives a pretty clear And if not clear, clear in the sense of character and of person that the Messiah was to be. It speaks, first of all, of that it will be from the stump of Jesse in Isaiah 11, verse 1. And then goes on to say, "And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by what his eyes see, or decide disputes by what his ears hear. But with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his waist, and faithfulness the belt of his loins." So there's a lot that's said there about Jesus' character, and a lot that we can see about Jesus' character from other Old Testament passages as well. But there are two things I want you to notice from this passage. First of all, that it is to come from the ancestry of Jesse, that is the ancestry of King David, who is already well established in this time as the great king of Israel. Both David and his son Solomon were extremely successful and rich kings. Even in the time of David, even though he did not take his full kingship until he was already much older than when he had been promised the throne, he became a very prosperous king. And under Solomon, the kingdom of Israel expanded to the entire promised land for the only time in the history of Israel. The second thing that I want us to notice is that this is a powerful image. And so there is a lot about Jesus' character in here, but at the end of this section, in the first five verses, in verse 4, it says, "He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked." This is a powerful, powerful figure. And so the image that the Jews and even the 12 might have of the Messiah as someone who is coming is someone who's going to be of the kingly line, so they might be looking for someone who looks like a king. And secondly, someone who's very powerful, someone who's going to come with the power and the authority, maybe even the military authority of a king. Well, Jesus is a king, but he's not the kind of king they were necessarily expecting. And he's a king that after supper got down on his knees and washed the disciples' feet. Now, the washing of the feet in and of itself is something that might have lost its effect on us when it comes to looking at this and applying it. And the reason is because it's something that is very particular to an Old Testament culture. Because this is a time when people wear sandals a lot. And not just as a style thing, but that's how they traveled. And so whenever you're kicking up the dust, your feet get really dirty wearing shoes that are just sandals that aren't closed. And so it was often the job of the lowest of the household servants, maybe even a slave, to wash the feet of travelers as they came in. So as Jesus is doing this, it's not just the fact that he is doing something that's a service to other people, or just that he's doing something for them, but it's that he is doing the lowest household duty that was possible for him to be doing at that point in time. Let's turn over to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, and we're going to begin in verse 5. "Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, although he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself, becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross." The very fact that Jesus came at all is a testament to his being a servant, to a servant-like nature. The fact that how he was born not in a palace, not in a castle, but in a feeding trough. And that he then, even as his time on this earth is slipping away, is spending his time doing the lowest of low servants' jobs for his disciples. And then let's spend a moment thinking about his death. If you turn over to Matthew chapter 27 and verse 34. Matthew 27 and verse 34. There it says, as Jesus is hanging on the cross, they offered him wine to drink mixed with gall, but when he tasted it, he would not drink it. If you look at some historical references or commentators when it comes to this passage, it is commonly thought that the reason that Jesus, once he had tasted this, would not drink it, is because they were offering him an early form of analgesic, a painkiller of sorts. So even as Jesus is dying the most excruciating death known to man, he refuses even the most primitive form of painkillers. Because his job, the reason that he came, was to suffer and to die for the sins of mankind. And so, the thing that we think about as we look at just how servant-like Jesus was, the most amazing thing to me isn't just the fact that Jesus was the sacrificial, but that he says, now you need to be that too. With this high level of sacrificial nature that Jesus was living at, with all that he did through his birth, his life, and his death, he says, now that's a standard I want you to live up to. And that's what Paul is also saying in Philippians chapter 2. He says at the very beginning of that section, to every one of you look out not only for your own interests, but also for the interests of others. And to esteem others as higher than yourself. Jesus is the standard to which we are to meet in service. Let's look at Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. There Paul says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. When you look at verse 1 of Romans chapter 12, the part that is typically rendered, which is your spiritual service of worship, the original word there is the Greek word logikos, which is quite literally where we get our word logical. And so some translations, particularly older translations, I believe, will render that word reasonable. It is that which is your reasonable service. It is logical. It is reasonable for all that God has done for us to live with our bodies as living sacrifices. Now, given all that Jesus has done, it's pretty easy for me to go and say, okay, Jesus, I'll serve you. All that you've done for me, I'll go and I'll serve you. But then, that's when Jesus says, okay, you want to serve me? I'll tell you how you do it. You go and you serve them. That's a little more difficult for us to wrap our minds around. That's a little bit more difficult for us to bring ourselves to do. Because, you know, Jesus is perfect. We know that he didn't sin. We know that there's nothing that he did wrong. And so it's easiest to see someone who's perfect and say, yes, that's someone I want to help out. That's someone I want to do things for. But when Jesus points to those around us, our brothers and sisters who have made many mistakes, the people out in the world who have made many mistakes, sometimes who aren't even penitent of those mistakes, and says, the way you serve me is you serve them. That's a little bit more difficult for us to do. Because sometimes it takes a lot of work for us to wrap our minds around the fact that what God calls us to do is to serve them regardless of whether they deserve it or not. Because we certainly don't deserve what he did for us. So I'd like for us to think just for a moment about how exactly do we do that? We see in Romans 12 that we are to offer our bodies as living sacrifices, that in Philippians chapter 2, we are to esteem the needs of others as higher than ourselves. But how exactly do we do that? How do we put that into practical, everyday terms? I'd like for us to think about three different areas that we can think about living more sacrificially or making strides towards living more sacrificially. The first is our attitudes. Our attitudes. James talks a little bit about this when he talks about people who are being partial in the sin of partiality. In James 2, beginning in verse 1, says, "My brothers, show no partiality as you hold the faith in our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory. For if a man wearing a gold ring and fine clothing comes into your assembly, and a poor man in shabby clothing also comes in, and if you pay attention to the one who wears the fine clothing and say, 'You sit here in a good place,' while you say to the poor man, 'You stand over there,' or 'Sit down at my feet,' have you not then made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?" So let's think about this as it pertains to the assembly for a moment. One very practical example of attitude is, how do you react when you come in and a visitor is sitting in your normal seat? Are you excited that a visitor is there? Or even, maybe not even they're sitting in your seat, but when a visitor comes, do you immediately turn your focus to, that's a person I want to serve. That's a person I need to find out why they're here. I need to find out why they're searching, and I want to see how I can help them come to an appreciation of God and come to a relationship with God. Or do we simply let them come, sit down, and leave, and never really say anything to them? Is it more important to us to be visiting with our friends in that moment, or to be thinking about what we're going to be doing for lunch, instead of seeking out a soul who might be seeking God? One of the things we looked at this morning when we were looking at generosity is that Deuteronomy 15 speaks of someone who does not give money that they have to be able to help their brother as being in sin. That when you shut your hand against your brother who is in need, then he cries out to the Lord against you, and you then are guilty of sin. You are found guilty of sin. It's not that he was taking advantage of anyone, stealing from anyone, abusing anyone, but simply by inaction, he was found to be in sin. Sometimes our biggest spiritual weaknesses, the problems and sins we struggle with the most, are not about what we do, but about the things that we neglect to do. And so think just not just about, am I being actively selfish, but what about, am I being passively selfish? Am I not looking for opportunities to help other people in their walks with God? Am I not looking for ways that I can actively place another person's needs above the needs of my own? What about in our time? How do we serve God, and how do we serve others in our time? I assume that most people here, maybe not all, so maybe I shouldn't assume that about everyone, but is probably on an email list of some sort. Now, I live in the Lafayette, Indiana area, and it's a college town, so there are a lot of people moving all the time. I went once, it was probably shouldn't have been, but it was the first time I had ever helped in a move, where a friend of mine was moving across town, still in the same area, but across town. And one of the first things that I remember thinking when I got there was, how are they going to find work for all of us here? We had trouble finding parking. There were at least like 25 guys that were out there. There were more inside, and then about 10 more that were at the other house once we got it and moved it over there. And what my challenge is, it should be that way every time somebody asks for help. Not just with moving, but what if someone can't really get around the house and they need help with fixing stuff around the house, changing some light bulbs, doing some cleaning? What about someone that needs help with the kids? Maybe they're a single parent. Anytime that a service is called upon, we have to be willing to spring to help. And too often, we do that really well for our friends, and we do that really well for our family and the people that we want to hang out with. But sometimes that's not really a sacrifice on our part. Sometimes it's just something that we want to do, and we want to be there. And I'm reminded of David, who after he had committed sin and needed to sacrifice to God, the man offered him and said, I'll give you my threshing floor. I'll give you this area that you need to have a sacrifice. You don't have to pay me anything for it. But David said, I will not offer that to God, which costs me nothing. To truly live sacrificially, according to Romans 12, for it to truly be a sacrifice, has to cost us something. And so let's think about that with our time. And we spent some time thinking about this morning, but let's also think about, as we did this morning, maybe some ways to live sacrificially with our money. Anytime someone might be in need of financial resources, being ready and willing to give of that resource if we do possess it. And I'm going to leave you tonight with a challenge. So we've looked at Jesus washing the disciples' feet and how he calls us to look with the same attitude on each other. And we've considered three areas in which we might do that, in our attitudes, in our time, and in our money. The new year's coming up. It's not very long at all. And for pretty much the first time ever, I'm actually thinking about making some new year's resolutions. A lot of people do new year's resolutions. I don't know how many people of you do, but a lot of people will do that either to whether they want to exercise, read more, pray more, whatever it may be. Here's my challenge. As you are making your new year's resolutions, and thinking about how serving Jesus was, identify three ways or three areas of service to others that you want to improve in. That you identify, these are ways that I can serve more. It might be, I want to help out more when there's something like moving or a work day at somebody's house. It might be that I want to look for places or people that need extra financial help and that I can give that. Or it just might be certain attitudes that you think, I really need to improve in this way. I really need to make an effort to get to know this person, to help this person, even if it's not somewhere I particularly want to be. Whatever it is, identify three areas that you can be more selfless and more serving. Write them down. Print them off. Put them on a whiteboard if you want to. Just so you see them. And pray every day for, let's say, at least 3 months, that God would help you and that you would increase in service in those areas. That's my challenge to you this evening, that we might serve as Jesus served. I mentioned earlier that Jesus came and he served to die for the sins of mankind. I'd like to also read from Mark chapter 16. Mark chapter 16. And starting in verse 15, and Jesus, he said to them, speaking of the apostles, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. That's the gospel call this evening. If you're subject to that, please come forward while we stand and sing.
Zion's call sweetly rings over land and sea, bidding us look to realms above. While the light from the throne shines for you and me, let us listen to the call of love. Zion's call is ringing, coming from the throne above. While we hear it ringing, let us heed the call of love. On the road to the goal, burdens we must bear, but we have help from realms above. We receive courage new when we kneel in prayer. Let us listen to the call of love. Zion's call is ringing, coming from the throne above. While we hear it ringing, let us heed the call of love. While we tarry below, there is work to do, and our strength cometh from above. As we labor and wave, we must all be true. Let us listen to the call of love. Zion's call is ringing, coming from the throne of love. The call of